Welcome back. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, talking a lot about the NFL Draft. 9 days away, the NFL Draft. We also want to talk about the draft gone by 30 years ago, 1983, the famous quarterback draft of 1983. Six quarterbacks chosen in the first round. Next week, there's a documentary that's going to air on ESPN, part of their 30 for 30 series of documentaries called Elway to Marino, the 1983 quarterback draft. It's next Tuesday, April 23rd, 8 p.m., a 90-minute show. On the line with us, an Emmy Award-winning supervising producer for NFL Films, the director of Elway to Marino, Ken Rogers. Ken, thank you very much for being on the air with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me, John.
We talk almost every night on our show about this year's draft, coming up this year's draft, you know, next week, 9 days away. I was around in 1983. There was nowhere near this much hype, this much pre-draft coverage, or even post-draft coverage 30 years ago, was there?
It really is amazing how much it's evolved. And I think some credit can be given to this draft. You know, if you think back to where the draft was in 1983, it was probably the third year it was on ESPN. It was the first year that fans lined up overnight to see the draft in person in New York. We had just come off in the NFL a player strike in 82. The league had been sued by Al Davis and lost that lawsuit. The USFL was poaching players. The number one draft pick, John Elway, was threatening to play Major League Baseball with the Yankees instead of play with the NFL. It was a real weak point in the NFL. And this year, in 1983, was a real transformative year in redefining a lot of franchises. You can look at what teams did, especially in the first round of this draft, and you can see the next decade of their team right in front of you. It's very obvious what's going to happen by what decisions they made on this day.
Ken, did anybody see it coming? I mean, did anybody going into that draft say, hey, there's going to be a half dozen quarterbacks in the first round this year?
Well, there was certainly talk of five. Kenny O'Brien, picked by the Jets, was not one that many people had picked high. And a lot of people thought that there would be four or so. A lot of it has to do with that college year. Again, there was a strike in 82, so a lot of focus was on college football. A lot of the scouts didn't have pro players to spend their time scouting, so they spent a lot of extra time in college, and what they saw, you know, it was an era where the rules were just starting to help the passing game, and everyone was looking for not just a quarterback for now, but a quarterback that could help you win for a decade plus. And I think there were a lot of teams targeting quarterbacks, and it just so happens that every team in the AFC East that year picked a quarterback. Back then, the Colts were obviously in the AFC East as well. So every single team, plus the Kansas City Chiefs, picked a quarterback in the first round.
Ken, what gave you the idea to make this documentary about this draft?
You know, it really started, so many people have talked about this 1983 draft and the quarterbacks and the six Hall of Famers that were picked in the first round. And as you said earlier on, there's so much attention paid to the draft these days. You sort of wonder, are we getting it all? Are there stories that we don't know about? And this sort of proved true in 1983 when we found a man named Marvin Demoff, who was the agent for both John Elway, who was picked first, and everyone wanted to trade up to try to get John Elway. And he was also the agent for Dan Marino, who was picked 27th, and almost every team passed on Dan Marino on the way down the first round. So he represented these two guys at the end of the beginning and end of the first round that bracket this very historic first round. And what he said to us in our first meeting was, you know, I kept a diary through the entire process that year. And we were able to, through that diary, tell the stories of all of these teams that were trying to trade up to get John Elway, teams that were, you know, trying to figure out whether Marino was someone they wanted to draft. And he was such an insider back then that his insights really proved that even today, we really don't know what all these teams are thinking. It really takes the deep insider knowledge to know. And we can sit around and talk about it as we do ad nauseum. But to really have an insider's perspective on this film is so unique. And when you see the diary entries, you just sense that, wow, this is real. This isn't conjecture. This guy was there. He was talking on the phone with the GMs of every team, and and all the details are laid out in front of you of what all the teams were trying to do in order to either get John Elway or figure out what they thought about Marino.
So you have Marvin Demoff and his memories and his diary, and you have your place of work, Ken, NFL Films, where you're sitting on all kinds of archival footage of that draft and those players. It probably, not that this would be easy to do, but it probably made it a little bit easier to put everything together based on that, huh?
Yeah, our archives were great on that day. We did shoot that day in New York, and ESPN, of course, televised the first round. But what was most difficult was that the film's topics were all secret phone calls, off-the-record conversations, backroom deals mm-hmm. that no cameras were around. Right. So we needed to find a way to tell that story. So visually, you know, it's a visual medium. We weren't writing an article. So what we did is actually go to the room that the draft was held in 1983. It's now the Park Central Hotel in New York. And the only thing that still remained the same in this room was the chandeliers. And we, through art direction and set construction, totally reconstructed and recreated the room that the 1983 draft happened in. Wow. In order to interview Marvin Demoff in that space and really bring you back to the time and be able to show you what the room looked like in 1983, but also sort of give you a ghostly feeling that this room still is there, because what happened in that room still resonates today throughout the NFL.
Now, of course, the draft is Radio City Music Hall with, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of spectators. But what hotel was that back in 1983, and how big a crowd, how big a gathering was that for the NFL draft back then, Ken?
Yeah, it was the Park Sheraton.
Okay.
And it really is a very small ballroom. It's used for medium-sized weddings these days. I would say there was probably about 150, 200 people up in the balconies, which were really just hallways overlooking this ballroom. And, you know, down on the floor were two, three people per table for each team that was present. And an ESPN set with three people, and that was it, a couple cameramen. I mean, there was maybe in the whole space, there might have been 400 people there.
Amazing. And you recreated all that in that same ballroom. We're talking with Ken Rogers from NFL Films. He is the director of the 30 for 30 documentary coming out next week, Elway to Marino, next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock on ESPN. Well, the draft itself, it's pretty obvious that going into the draft and even after the draft, that John Elway was the central figure in that 83 quarterback draft, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's amazing how many stories there are about the teams that we're trying to get them. And you know, just some examples. That one of the more controversial segments that we reveal is the Raiders' attempt at the time the Los Angeles Raiders' attempt to get John Elway, and their dealings with Chicago to get the number six pick so that they could then trade that pick to get the Colts pick at number one for John Elway. And the accusations that the league office in New York of the NFL was somehow involved in stopping that deal from happening, because, of course, Al Davis at the time was not the best friend of the National Football League and its front offices. Yeah. So there's lots of tough feelings, hard feelings about what happened that year. Everyone was trying to get John Elway, who was really, you know, well before Eli Manning, he was flat out saying, I won't play for the team that picks me if it's number one, Baltimore Colts. I won't play there. In fact, I won't even play football. I'll go play with the New York Yankees, who want to sign me. And George Steinbrenner had, you know, very keen interest in John and had him penciled in 1985 as the starting right fielder in 1985. I mean, he was a long-term thinker when it came to his team. And John really did consider playing for the Yankees. And, you know, when the Colts picked him number one anyway, because they couldn't find a trade they wanted to make, there was a week there where John Elway was pretty adamant that, okay, then I'll go play for the Yankees. very, very dramatic storyline, much more so than anything that's happened in recent years.
Yeah, and in fact, I love the clip that you had of Terry Bradshaw being interviewed about Elway, who said, who cares who you are? Go ahead and play baseball. And it was great stuff from Terry Bradshaw back then.
Yes, John Elway was a real lightning rod at the time. There was a lot of people who thought he was a spoiled brat for demanding to be traded away from a team that was picking number one. You know, I think it worked out for him, and he obviously had an incredible career, but at the time it was really, it was a controversial stance and one that Marvin Demoff was right in the center of.
Yeah. Hey, Ken, what does your documentary have to say about Jim Kelly? And in fact, the you know, most Bills fans know that the Bills chose Notre Dame tight end Tony Hunter at 12 and then came back and got Kelly two picks later. But what else is in there about Jim Kelly in the documentary?
You know, it's funny. The documentary is filled with teams that either really were real winners in the first round of the draft, and there's some real losers in the first round of the draft, and teams that really, for lack of a better term, blew it when it came to their pick. The Bills are interesting in that you can sort of say they were both. They made the right choice, but then they lost Jim Kelly to the USFL for three seasons.
Yeah.
For the two seasons he played in the USFL. So it's really, you know, interesting dichotomy there. And the revelation, which is just so odd to see these days, is a young Jim Kelly at the time really adamantly saying, I don't like Buffalo and I don't want to play in Buffalo. I mean, it's shocking to see now because, you know, Jim's one of the greatest guys we interviewed for this documentary, and he's so in love with Buffalo and so in love with the people there. And to see him as a young man, I mean, flat out saying, I want to play in Houston because I'd play anywhere instead of playing for Buffalo. It's shocking, but at the same time, given the history of what happened when he came back, it has a little bit of humor to it, and he looks at it in a humorous way and realizes that he was wrong about his refusal to play in Buffalo. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, small interesting details like that, including the fact that, you know, they picked Jim Kelly at 14, and the Patriots at pick number 15 were waiting on Jim Kelly. That's who the New England Patriots were set to pick, was Jim Kelly. And when Kelly went off the board by Buffalo, they were really lost and decided to just take who they thought was the best player on the board, and that was another quarterback, Tony Eason. And that didn't really work out nearly as good as Jim Kelly, obviously.
Yeah, when you mentioned a moment ago about the teams that, you know, kind of swung and whiffed on their first-round quarterbacks, were you thinking of Eason to New England or O'Brien to the Jets or maybe even Blackledge to Kansas City?
You know, it's real tough. I think everyone in this film gets a fair shake as to their values. A lot of people talk about Ken O'Brien at 24 as a Jets pick, and it's easy to do because Dan Marino was still there three picks later. But you got to remember, there's a lot of teams that picked other players instead of Dan Marino before the Jets picked Ken O'Brien. I think the shock was that Ken O'Brien was a Division II quarterback and no one had ever heard of him. But Kenny O'Brien had a really good career. It's pretty unfair that O'Brien gets, you know, called a bust in this draft when he has three Hall of Fame quarterbacks to be compared to. I think Easton and Blackledge are probably, you know, the two that you would point to and say that didn't have as successful careers. But still, even then, Easton played in a Super Bowl and you know, was in the league for eight seasons. Blackledge never really got a chance to catch on in Kansas City. But even Blackledge, when you look at it at the time, when he was picked at the number seven spot by the Kansas City Chiefs, he had just led Penn State to a national championship. I mean, he was not a reach. This wasn't out of the blue to pick Todd Blackledge over Jim Kelly or Dan Marino. It made sense at the time. It's only in historical retrospect where you say, why would anyone pick anyone but Jim Kelly and Dan Marino?
Yeah. Six quarterbacks in that first round in 1983, Ken. Four of them played in Super Bowls. Four of them went to Pro Bowls. Three of them are in the Hall of Fame. Is that why you think this is the quarterback draft that changed the history of the league?
Yeah, it's certainly the class of quarterbacks. It's also, as I said earlier, the era that it came in. I mean, this was probably the weakest the NFL had been since the AFL-NFL wars of the 60s. So just after this is when football really began to take over and surpass baseball as the national sport. And it had to do with the young crop of players that were really exciting. And I think it's not just those quarterbacks. If you look at this first round, Eric Dickerson was drafted second. Kurt Warner, who was drafted third, the running back, Kurt Warner, Penn State, you know, really could have been a great player if not for an ACL tear. We had another Hall of Famer picked by the Oilers in Bruce Matthews. And at the end of the round, the Redskins, who had won the Super Bowl the year before, well, they just picked Darryl Green, who ends up playing for 20 seasons and goes into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the class is unbelievable as a whole. And there's great players later on. I mean, Darryl Talley's taken in the second round. It's really, there's a lot of talent coming out, especially given the fact that in that year, a lot of players were being coached by the USFL. And it makes you wonder, wow, if the USFL wasn't around, it really would have been quite the class.
Yeah. You know, I remember this vividly, Ken, and it's hard for me to believe that it was 30 years ago, but you sound a little bit like me. You sound like you love the history of the game, the history of the NFL. It's really not boring at all, is it?
No. You know, Steve Sable always said that if you think you know the story, just look a little bit deeper, because there's always details lost to history. I mean, it's very easy to think about this 1983 draft and give the bullet points that even I'm giving here, but there's so many details and stories that when you talk to the people involved, it's like a soap opera. I mean, this really is, this film, we really feel, is like a soap opera. You can't believe some of the things you're hearing. You can't believe that in this diary, you hear that Bill Walsh, the head coach of the 49ers, was very interested in John Elway and considered trying to get him, but he would have to trade a quarterback named Joe Montana in order to do it. I mean, you hear that and you say, that's impossible. But it's true. And you hear the story that I'm sure a lot of fans up there know about Jim Kelly ready to sign with the Buffalo Bills in the offices when a phone call comes through from the USFL.
Yep.
And a secretary at the Bills puts the call through to Jim Kelly's agent, and Jim Kelly's agent says, well, we're ready to sign here, and the USFL says, no, don't sign right now. We can make you a better offer. So Kelly and his agents leave, and if the secretary had not interrupted that meeting, Jim Kelly would have been a quarterback for the Bills in 1983 instead of 1986. And by the way, the man who made that call from the USFL was Bruce Allen, who was the GM of the Chicago Blitz, who's now apparently the GM of the Redskins in Washington. So there's all these characters and all these stories that exist that in 1983 you would have never heard of them because they were still fresh in people's minds. It was still working its way out. History has a way of revealing those details as years go on. I think whatever happens next week in the 2013 draft, you'll hear a story about it. The Bills picked X player, and here's why. But I guarantee 30 years later, you're going to hear stories that are deeper and more personal about what happens next week. And sometimes it takes a while for those stories to come to the surface.
Can't wait to watch this next week, Ken. We thank you very much for being on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
Anytime at all.